side. Honor them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see not joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a can just see, open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Sunday, June the 11th, 2023, and you are listening to today's edition of The Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope you are all doing well. Those of you of goodwill, as we like to say often on this program, we don't wish well for our enemies. Not our enemies who are hell-bent on our destruction, and I don't just mean destruction with small d, small e, small s, all the way, but capital letters all the way, our destruction. Let's see, it's been a week and a half or so since we were together, folks, and been very busy, but included in that busy adjective has been me doing a lot of reading and a lot of research on the topic that we discussed on the last program, which was the, of course, those of you who listen to the program will recall that the main focus of our discussion was this fascinating interview that the Israeli journalist Barak Ravid did with Haaretz newspaper, and wherein he lays out some of the details of the book that he wrote concerning Donald Trump and Trump's plans for bringing peace to the Middle East. And so since that time, folks, I have just been digging diligently in finding more and more information dealing with this particular subject. Now, those of you who have followed the website and the program know that this has been a special focus of my own. I maintain that the entire animus against Donald Trump on the part of the organized forces of anti-Gentilism, again, I have to give credit where credit is due, that I didn't come up with that, folks. I wish I had that statement, the organized forces of anti-Gentilism. My good friend Bob, you know who you are. He's the one who came up with that. He came up with a couple of other really good ones as well that I plan to use in the program, the programs to come, one of which is really funny. You know, I always referred to that thing that the followers of Judaism wear on top of their head as the pancake, that they always put the pancake on their heads. He came up with one that I think is even more humorous, which is the toilet plunger. You know, if you look at the thing that they wear on their heads that I have always referred to as a pancake, he refers to it as a toilet plunger. I actually kind of like that better. So anyway, so I have been extremely busy doing lots of research. And by the way, folks, reading Barak Ravid's book, a very dear friend of mine and a listener of the program, somebody who really functions as my alter ego in many respects. This person is what Mike Piper used to be for me when he was still with us. May he rest in peace. And so I got my hands on this book, and it is it's quite a work, folks. It's about 400 pages long, but it basically it is the answer to the question as to why everything is falling apart right now. Now, let's see. Before we get into that, folks, I'm going to quote something here, and We're going to use this as the launching point. And by the way, folks, just very quickly, if there is such a possibility with yours truly, we are going to be covering this Israeli journalist's thesis, the work that he did featuring these interviews with Donald Trump, and basically where he lays out the reality of what we tried to get across unsuccessfully for many years, not because we didn't do a good job or that we didn't do our homework, but rather people just weren't willing to listen. It had collided and conflicted with so many things that they had personally believed themselves about the relationship between Trump and those of the Hebraic origin, the Hebraic pedigree. It just had collided with so many things, and people were just unable and unwilling to step out of that comfort zone and to consider other possible explanations as to why everything was falling apart. As I said, I'm going to read a quote first, and this is going to set the discussion for the rest of the program. Let's see. This comes from not just a book, folks, but I would say the most important book that has been written in the last 100 years. And I'll give the title of the book and the author of the book. I'll fill in those blanks for you after I'm done reading it. But it's very important here, and it deals with Kennedy, deals with his relationship with Israel, and how his death can be tied. Yes, I know those of you out there listening, you're saying to themselves, "Oh, I know what he's quoting from here." Well, just humor me, folks. Okay, so we're taking from chapter 5 of this book. And the title of that chapter is JFK's Secret War with Israel. Now, I want you to plug that into your thought processes here, folks, because all of the conventional wisdom up until the point that this book was written, and still that exists to this very day in certain circles, maintains as a type of almost religious dogma that JFK was friendly with the Jews, that he was elected by the Jews, and therefore any discussions whatsoever involving Kennedy and any secret war he may have been engaged in which he may have been engaged against them, just doesn't make any sense, because these types will say, "Well, look at him. He's entertaining Ben Gurion, the Israeli Prime Minister, there in the White House, and they're shaking hands, and they're smiling, and there's no way that these two men could actually be at war with each other, because look at them, look at them." Anyway, I'm going to quote from this book, Chapter 5, JFK's Secret War with Israel. And our writer writes, quote, "The history books have told us of John F. Kennedy's epic struggles with Fidel Castro and the Soviets in the Bay of Pigs debacle, and of course the Cuban Missile Crisis. Yet only in recent years have we begun to learn of Kennedy's secret war with Israel. Much of the conflict stemmed from Israel's determination to build a nuclear bomb. This is a hidden history that helps explain, in part, the dynamic forces at work resulting in Kennedy's assassination. By mid-1963, Israeli Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion hated Kennedy with a passion. In fact, he considered JFK to be a threat to the very survival of the Jewish state itself. One of John F. Kennedy's first presidential appointments was naming his former campaign aide, Meyer Mike Feldman, as his point man for Jewish and Israeli affairs, an important post, especially considering JFK's tenuous relationship with Israel and its American lobby. According to author Seymour Hersh, quote, the president viewed Feldman, whose strong support for Israel was widely known, as a necessary evil whose highly visible White House position was a political debt that had to be paid. However, the administration was determined to make certain, according to Hirsch, that nobody, Feldman in particular, would be able to circumvent any administration policy insofar as the Middle East was concerned. Let's see. Hold on just a second here, folks. Okay, I'm just going to go ahead and read through this because, as I said, it's going to serve as the launching pad for today's discussion and for whatever future discussions we may have in continuing this very important discussion. Okay, next chapter, Zionists in the Cabinet Room. President Kennedy himself had his own suspicions about Feldman, according to the president's close aide, Charles Bartlett. Bartlett recalls a visit with the new president at his home in Hyannisport, Massachusetts, on Saturday on the Jewish Sabbath. Talk turned to Feldman's role in the White House bureaucracy. I imagine Mike's having a meeting of the Zionists in the Cabinet Room, the president said, according to Bartlett. The president's brother, Robert F. Kennedy, himself said that his brother admired Feldman's work but added his major interest was Israel rather than the United States. However, while Meyer Feldman was busy promoting Israel's interests at the White House, the president was sending out a message to the rest of the foreign policy establishment in Washington. Kennedy was making it clear that he was very much interested in finding a path to peace in the Middle East and was, in particular, looking for ways to solve the problem of finding a home for the Palestinian refugees who had been displaced by Israel in 1948. According to Hirsch, State Department Arabists, those are people who specialize in Arab affairs, folks, in case you didn't know that, State Department Arabists were presently surprised early in 1961 to get word from the White House that, quote, just because 90% of the Jewish vote had gone for Kennedy, it did not mean he was in their pocket. I'm going to reread that, folks, just for emphasis, because there is so much importance in that particular statement, and particularly as it pertains to understanding the entire phenomenon involving Donald J. Trump. According to Hirsch, that's Seymour Hirsch, folks, a veteran investigative journalist. He was the one who broke the story this past, however many months ago it was, that it was the United States that had blown up the Nord Stream pipelines. And he had some pretty good sources on it. I have some questions that remain to be answered on that issue, but the notion that the Russians did it or that the pipelines just blew up on their own, obviously Hirsch has disproven that. Anyway, according to Hirsch, State Department Arabists were pleasantly surprised early in 1961 to get word from the White House, according to one source, that, quote, just because 90% of the Jewish vote had gone for Kennedy, it didn't mean he was in their pocket. This is Hirsch, Seymour Hirsch, writing this, folks. Now, folks, those of you who have read this important book, of course, know that it is the groundbreaking work, Final Judgment, by our good friend Mike Piper, may he rest in peace, where he lays out in painstaking detail, 800 pages worth of painstaking detail, that it wasn't the Cubans who killed Kennedy, it wasn't the mafia that killed Kennedy. It wasn't the CIA that killed Kennedy. Yes, these various characters, they did play supporting roles in this, but that the principal player that even up until this day, except for Mike's important investigative journalism on his own, that up until this day has escaped the notice of all within all of the talk and discussion involving Kennedy's assassination, that the principal player who was responsible for Kennedy's assassination was Israel, and it was due, number one, to Kennedy's absolute insistence that Israel not attain nuclear weapons. That's number one. And number two, as you're about to find out in a moment here, the fact that Kennedy had made it part of his foreign policy agenda that he was going to deal with the Palestinian situation. Okay, now keep something in mind here as I continue on with this discussion here today, folks. Kennedy was elected in 1960. Obviously, he was murdered by Israel in 1963. The 1967 war had not taken place yet. The Middle East, as tumultuous as it was at that time, it did not become, it was not, and would not for several years become the ticking time bomb that it has become, that it is now. Okay. Nevertheless, Kennedy, and I would say as well his brother, they planned on dealing with this situation because they understood the dangers that this posed, this ticking time bomb. And like I said, folks, the Six-Day War had not happened yet. Okay, the displacement of as many as almost a million Palestinians and the legal occupation of all of this land, particularly in the West Bank, the Sinai Peninsula, the Gaza Strip, the Golan Heights, all of that, this had not taken place yet. Okay, so anyway, so Piper continues on. It is surprising to realize, let me back up here just a second. Piper then quotes Richard Curtis, who was a career diplomat in the State Department who specialized, he was one of those Arabist folks, who specialized on the Middle East situation. And Curtis writes in, quote, "A Changing Image, American Perceptions of the Arab-Israeli Dispute." He writes in his chapter entitled "President Kennedy and Good Intentions Deferred Too Long," quote, "It is surprising to realize with the benefit of hindsight that from the time Kennedy entered office as the narrowly elected candidate of a party heavily dependent upon Jewish support, nevertheless, he was planning to take a whole new look at U.S. Mideast policy." Quote, Curtis says, quote, "He obviously could not turn the clock back and undo the work of President Truman, his Democratic predecessor, in making the establishment of Israel possible. Nevertheless, Kennedy was determined, however, to develop good new personal relationships with individual Arab leaders, including those with whom the previous administration's relations had deteriorated." Now, folks, let's bring this discussion forward to 2023, and particularly with the events of this week, where President Trump has been indicted on 37 counts related to his handling of these classified documents. And go back to 2016, folks, and what was, from the very beginning, an obvious attempt on the part of those aforementioned organized forces of anti-Gentilism to first deny him the presidency, and then, after having failed in that endeavor, trying to run him down, wear him down, so that he could not go forward with his plans. Now, we argued from the beginning, folks, that what was at stake here were Trump's plans for basically doing in the Middle East what John F. Kennedy was planning to do as well. Finding a resolution to the situation with the Palestinians, and in particular, Trump's concerns over nuclear weapons, and that these weapons would be used to basically destroy all life on Earth. Okay. Now I'm going to read a little bit more from Mike's book here, because this is very important. However, Kennedy wanted one thing in particular understood by all sides in the conflict. Quote, "The new U.S. president wanted to make crystal clear that the U.S. meant what it said in the Tripartite Declaration of 1950. This would have been under Truman. that we will act promptly and decisively against any nation in the Middle East which attacks its neighbor. Now, we need to, and Mike writes, this policy was directed not only to the Arabs, but to Israel as well. Okay, now folks, I'll admit, I don't know off the top of my head exactly what the Tripartite Declaration of 1950 was. I'm going to look it up. Sorry, I should have done that ahead of time. This is very, very unprofessional of me. Okay. Nope. Yep. Nope. Okay. The Tripartite Declaration laid down by the... Anyway, that's too long for me to try to digest and just to... So anyway, the long and the short of it, folks, according to what Mike is writing here, is that Kennedy was sending a message to Israel. Remember, folks, this is before 1967, when Israel would launch this war against Egypt, Jordan, and Syria. A war which she says was a defensive war, but one which she put into motion now by her own admission. She admits it. She has always painted herself as the innocent victim seeking to defend herself from an imminent attack on the part of the Arabs. But now, you know, they come out and they admit, no, we set the whole thing up. We set the whole thing up. Anyway. So Kennedy, according to Mike's book here, is saying that we will act promptly and decisively against any nation in the Middle East which attacks its neighbor. Another reason that they had to get rid of him. Okay. Let's see. Israel's lobby reacts. Soon after Kennedy assumed office, Israel and its American lobby began to understand the importance of Kennedy's positioning with regards to the Arab-Israeli conflict. Israel was not happy, to say the very least, and began putting the heat on the White House. Through the aegis of its supporters in Congress, many of whom relied upon support from the Israeli lobby for campaign contributions and political leverage. Folks, is this not what all of us witnessed going all the way back to 2016? Once the Israeli lobby, the Jewish lobby, whatever we want to call it, once they understood what it was that Trump was planning to do with regards to the Middle East, and especially with regards to the Palestinian situation, they immediately turned up the heat. They immediately, 2018, the elections that took place in 2018, that swept all of these Trump haters into the House of Representatives. It was right here on this little endeavor, folks, this humble little endeavor, that we predicted that now that the Congress had flipped and all of Trump's enemies had been put into office by Israel, that he would be impeached and that it would be a nonstop screeching campaign on the part of Congress against him in order to prevent him from going forward with his plans for this Middle East peace deal. Okay, let's see. Okay, according to America's most noted longtime Jewish critic of Israel, Dr. Alfred Lilienthal, quote, while the president more often through Vice President Lyndon Johnson gave lip service to Israeli aspirations, nevertheless, his administration continued to resist pressures. Okay, so folks, the reason we're using this article as this section of Mike's book as the launching pad for this discussion is to show that the same template that existed back in right after the election of John F. Kennedy, and even though he was narrowly elected with the help of organized Jewish interests, nevertheless, these Jewish interests went to work destroying him once they found out what it was he planned to do in the Middle East. Now, again, folks, I hate to have to belabor this point, but it is a point worth belaboring. For the last 7 years, beginning in 2016 and then up to the present, the significance of what happened to Kennedy, how he was, you know, his life and his presidential career came to a screeching halt in Dallas, Texas. You know, you ask the average person who considers themselves well-versed on issues dealing with Israel and the Middle East, you ask them, have you heard of the Piper thesis, that the Mossad was the one who organized the hit against Kennedy because he was going to initiate a drastic change in American foreign policy in the Middle East? And they'll say, oh yeah, absolutely, yeah, that's a brilliant thesis. I know all about it. Israel killed Kennedy. However, these unfortunately, many of these same types, most of these same types, when you ask them, well, what about Trump and the Jews? Oh, Trump, yeah, the Jews love him. They put him into office. He was going to bring a peace deal that Benjamin Netanyahu wanted. Okay. So here we have this precedent involving John F. Kennedy, what was done to him, and how, up until Mike's book, folks, the details of this behind-the-scenes war between Kennedy and Israel, or the Jewish lobby, whatever word we want to, you know, they're the same thing. It's Israel, the state in the Middle East, and the Jewish lobby, which are those tentacles operating in America in furthering Israel's policies here. In the same way that this behind-the-scenes war existed between Kennedy and Israel, it has also existed between Israel and Donald Trump. Despite all of the flowery diplomatic things that have taken place, which we're going to be hearing, on this program often, you know, where Trump refers to Netanyahu as my good friend, and Netanyahu refers to Trump as my good friend. Nevertheless, these two, as recently finalized with the investigative work of Barak Ravid, the Israeli journalist, this was a farce. It did not exist. This positive relationship between Trump and Israel, between Trump and Netanyahu, did not exist. And it was over Trump's plans for changing things in the Middle East. Now, I can't stress this strongly enough, folks, because unfortunately, and I really, really do hope that I'm wrong about this. I hope that I'm wrong. And I'll admit, before making the statement that I'm about to make, I don't spend a lot of time flitting around the internet, reading what other people say on their websites. You know, I basically have my nose in the Israeli press, in the Hebrew press, the Jewish press, all the time. So I don't know what so-and-so is saying about it. But from what I've been able to gather, any and all discussion involving Trump and Israel, it's always in the opposite direction. It's that Israel loves Trump. Benjamin Netanyahu loves Trump. And we are missing a hugely important piece of this puzzle as to why our lives have had a wrecking ball taken to them, especially in the last couple of years. There's a huge piece missing from this. And, you know, we're not just talking about as took place in 1963 with the assassination of a president. We're talking about the very, very real possibility of an all-out nuclear war between the United States and countries such as Russia and China. That's where all of this is headed, folks. And it is impossible for us to get a grasp, a grasp on this situation, both in the cognitive sense as well as in the practical sense, of bringing a screeching halt to this planned destruction on our part when these vitally important pieces of information are missing. Now, of course, we can expect this to be the case with the mainstream media. They're not going to touch on this any more than they would touch on JFK being assassinated by Israel. They are going to, they're going to, as they are now, they are going to make this all about radical leftists and woke and Black Lives Matter. And, you know, it's just this tornado of all of these different ideas swirling around. Immigration and borders and crime and gun control and abortion and, take your pick. Okay. But at the center of that, the eye of the hurricane, at the very center of it, it is all about Trump's plans for the Middle East. Now, I'm just going to touch on this very quickly, and then we're going to jump to the main topic of today's discussion. Oh my gosh, what is it? I forgot what I was going. I'm really getting tired of this approaching old age thing, folks. All right, we'll come back to that. Hopefully, it will reemerge here in a bit. Okay, so today's discussion. Yes, folks, I know we're already, 20 minutes or something like that. Oh, 30 minutes into the program, and we haven't even gotten to the meat of the program. Okay, so I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to start off today's discussion with a soundbite, and please bear with me, folks. Yeah, okay, here we go.
Today, Donald Trump, the only former president ever to face criminal charges, made his first public remarks since this week's bombshell federal indictment, 37 felony counts. Trump rallied thousands of Republicans in Columbus, Georgia. He described both his legal trouble and his re-election campaign as a final battle with corrupt forces he maintains are destroying the country. Tonight, he speaks again in Greensboro, North Carolina, and that is where we find CBS's Scott McFarlane, who leads us off tonight. Scott?
Mark, less than 72 hours until Donald Trump is fingerprinted and has his booking photo taken by U.S. Marshals. He's trying to rally some political support here tonight ahead of the biggest criminal case in American history. Just after touching down and then taking the stage in Georgia, Donald Trump wasted little time slamming Special Counsel Jack Smith's indictment, which charges Trump with 37 federal criminal counts, including obstruction and conspiracy.
The ridiculous and baseless indictment of me by the Biden administration's weaponized Department of Injustice will go down as among the most horrific abuses of power in the history of our country.
The charges allege Trump knowingly kept and risked exposing records with America's top secrets, including nuclear and military capabilities, showing some to a writer and to a political ally, and of trying to cover it up, attempting to convince his lawyers or to work around his lawyers to circumvent a search warrant.
But I never thought such a thing could happen to America. As far as the joke of an indictment, it's a horrible thing.
Speaking before a Greensboro, North Carolina crowd that Trump himself would address hours later, Mike Pence also criticized the prosecution.
And I'm deeply troubled to see this indictment move forward.
Some Republican voters who came to hear Trump speak tonight said they expect the case will give Trump a political surge.
I think he gets stronger with an indictment.
He's getting stronger.
But the legal peril is real when Trump faces a judge in Miami Tuesday afternoon, says Florida-based criminal attorney Michelle Suskauer.
The federal government is not playing here. They've done their investigation. They have their documents. They have their photographs. They have their witnesses. And they are ready to go.
With charges carrying a maximum of decades in prison and making Trump the most famous criminal defendant in U.S. history.
This is all going to get very real for him.
As he traveled here to Greensboro, Donald Trump was joined by his co-defendant in his new federal criminal case, his aide, Walt Nauta. Mark?
Scott McFarlane for us tonight in North Carolina. Thanks.
Okay, folks. So let's just take this apart. Let's unpack this a little bit. Okay, so now Trump has been indicted at the federal level because of these documents that they say he has retained. Again, folks, it's important that we focus on the bullseye on this instead of all of the background scenery that is swirling around it. Now, depending on where you go and who you listen to, just like it is with many things, okay, it's always the wrong conversation taking place. Now, I'll give you an example. Every time there's a mass shooting, immediately the conversation swirls around one of two issues, more gun control or less gun control, instead of having a national conversation, which is what has happened to our country, who is responsible for turning this country into a war zone. What group of people and their control over media, over Hollywood, over movies, you know, all of these things, folks. Media is a drug. It is no different than some intoxicating and debilitating substance that gets put into a needle, a syringe, and is injected into the bloodstream and then affects the person in a certain way. Okay. Hollywood and media and all of that, absolutely, that is what it is. And we never have that conversation. And the reason that we don't, number one, is because everybody knows in whose hands that media is firmly held. It's number one. And number two, because whenever anybody brings it up, they get shouted down, even though that is the conversation that should be taking place. What has happened to our society? Who is responsible for putting all of these violent ideas and violent images into the collective brain of the American people, that you have these especially young, angry males, that you have them coming up with the harebrained idea, hey, I'm going to go into some school and I'm going to shoot a bunch of innocent people, and that's going to give my life meaning. Okay. Now, likewise with the issue involving Trump and these documents, okay, the discussion that's taking place, depending on where you go, if you go to the left-wing media, they're going to say, you know, he retained these documents in violation of the, I don't know what it is, the Presidential Records Act or whatever it is, and he violated the various statutes that have been codified regarding national security information. And then on the other side, if you go and listen to the media that basically supports Trump, the right-wing media, they'll say, no, as president, he had the right to declassify those documents, okay? And this is something that many presidents have done. They have declassified documents. Instead of, folks, the real issue that needs to be discussed is, what's on those documents? What was on those documents that Donald Trump, who is out to prevent World War III, and who is absolutely intent upon, you know, throwing water on this ticking time bomb in the Middle East through the mechanism of this peace deal that he has been working on now for 40 years. What was on those documents related to all of that, that they saw it necessary to raid his home in Mar-a-Lago in the early hours of the morning with armed FBI agents in order to seize these documents? That's the discussion that we need to be having, not whether or not it was legal for him to declassify certain documents, whether or not he didn't declassify these documents. All of these things surrounding this, swirling around about this, all of these items, all of these discussions taking place are irrelevant next to the big picture, which is what was on those documents. Now, I'm going to take a little trip down memory lane here, folks. I'm going to cite two important articles that appeared on the website The first one just took place about, well, it was August the 10th, 2022, so coming up on a year. And the title of it says, Trump says, quote, nobody's gotten to the bottom of 9/11, and the documents detailing those attacks should be disclosed. Now, folks, those of you who were paying attention back in 2016, when Trump was running for the presidency for the first time, will remember that he often cited the fact that there were things that the public didn't know that they should know about, and that as president, he was going to begin the process of making the public aware of these things. He referenced 9/11. He referenced John F. Kennedy, the assassination of John F. Kennedy. There were lots of things that he referenced in a very, you know, a vague manner. But rest assured, folks, rest assured, the forces arrayed against him, who are intent upon seeing World War III get started, they were paying very, very close attention to these things that he was saying. Okay, so this story here, let's see, MSNBC, former President Donald Trump on Thursday defended hosting a Saudi-funded tournament at his golf course in Bedminster, New Jersey, by casting doubt on any connection between Saudi Arabia and the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Asked to respond to criticism from families of September 11th victims who are urging Americans to protest. Sorry, folks, something happened here. Oh, yeah, the computer stalled out. Sorry. Sorry, folks. I'm trying. Yeah, okay. I'm doing some high kind of high tech stuff here. Let's see. No, it's not that one. Hold on. I'll get back to it in a second. I apologize. Okay. Asked to respond to harsh criticism from families of September 11th victims who are urging Americans to protest the Saudi-backed golf tournament, Trump suggested there was still uncertainty surrounding the attacks of that day. Nobody, quote, nobody has gotten to the bottom of 9/11, unfortunately, and they should have, Trump said. Let's see, the group has also highlighted an appearance Trump made on Fox News's Fox and Friends in 2016 when he acknowledged Saudi Arabia's role in the 9/11 attacks and said that documents supporting that conclusion should be publicly disclosed. Okay, and now let's move forward here, folks, to recent times, more recent times. In fact, let's see, it was May the 16th, when the, at least when the story first came out, and it is entitled, Trump vows to release all JFK assassination files, quote, very early in his term when he is reelected. This comes off of the Epoch Times, and let's see, let me scroll through. Okay, former President Donald Trump vowed this week to release all files related to the assassination of former President John F. Kennedy, coming after his nephew alleged that, meaning Kennedy's nephew, that U.S. intelligence officials may have been involved in his 1963 death. Quote, I released a lot, as you know, and I will release everything else, Trump told the Messenger on Monday, referring to the Kennedy records. While Trump was in office, he released some documents but did not – there's that word, folks, documents. He released some documents but did not release all of the records. At the time, his administration said that it could not release all of the records because, quote, certain information should continue to be redacted because of identifiable national security, law enforcement, and foreign affairs concerns. Okay? So, folks, you know, what Trump – did is that he kept these documents because he plans to use them, quite simply. Now, remember, folks, going back to the program that we did last week, Trump and Netanyahu are not friends. Trump blames Netanyahu, at least on the surface, he blames him for destroying his peace deal in the Middle East. But I guarantee you, I guarantee you folks, in his heart of hearts, whether he says it out loud within earshot of reporters or not, he knows that Netanyahu didn't play just an important role, but played the role in destroying Trump's presidency and in bringing Joe Biden into the White House in 2020. And remember now, folks, Trump's, you know, this was a thing that everybody honed in on when it became news in the interview that Ravid did with Trump, where he said, I'm not going to say the word, folks, you know what it is, F Bibi. Now imagine that you're Benjamin Netanyahu, folks, and Donald Trump has just spilled the beans on the fact that you destroyed his plans for peace in the Middle East. And Trump has just given an interview with an Israeli journalist and said, F Bibi. He's untrustworthy, he's treacherous. And you're Benjamin Netanyahu, and you're sitting in Jerusalem as the prime minister of Israel. And Trump is gaining in the polls. He has a lot of American support. What do you think is going to happen when Trump gets elected? What do you think he's going to do to you, the person that he blames for destroying his plans for peace in the Middle East, and somebody he has singled out and specifically said was treacherous and disloyal for congratulating Joe Biden on winning the presidency when it was obvious that it was a stolen election? Netanyahu knows that Trump is coming from him, for him. Okay, I'll just answer the question myself. Netanyahu knows. So what do you do if you're Benjamin Netanyahu? You assemble all of your Synonym, all of your agents in America to make sure that Trump doesn't get into the White House, which brings us to the topic of today's program, folks, which is the indictments that have been brought against Donald Trump. Now, let's see. We're going to now. Okay, so people are saying, well, what does this have to do with Israel? It has everything to do with Israel, folks. Everything. Israel is intent upon doing to Donald Trump what they did to John F. Kennedy, to make sure that he's not the guy in the White House who is going to initiate these tectonic changes in American foreign policy in the Middle East that is going to scuttle Israel's plans for bringing about this dream that the Jews have had for thousands of years, of this giant sprawling theocratic empire stretching from the Nile to the Euphrates in accordance with how it is described in the Old Testament. Now, Trump's response to this, these indictments, okay, so he did the usual thing that you would expect him to do. He said, you know, this is a witch hunt. They are persecuting me because they know that I'm going to win. But it's much deeper than that, folks. And Trump has given us clues in that direction. Specifically by singling out this individual, Jack Smith, okay, the special prosecutor who has brought these charges. And in that regard, folks, we're going to listen to what Trump himself has to say about it.
Today, Donald Trump, the only former president ever to face criminal...
Nope, sorry, wrong file, folks. I apologize. Hold on, let's see. Yeah, okay, there.
Donald Trump is indicted, and they take one charge, and they turn it into 36 charges. You saw that. Everybody was amazed. Lawyers on television, yes. They're not usually the best lawyers, but some are very good. They're saying we've never seen anything like it. They took one charge and they made it 36 different times. And we have a thug who's in charge. This is a political hit job. Republicans are treated far differently at the Justice Department than Democrats. These are the same people who caused the Lois Lerner catastrophe. That's this deranged Jack. You know who I'm talking about. Jack Smith. What do you think his name used to be? I don't know. Does anybody ever? Jackson. Sounds so innocent. But probably.
Okay, now, folks, that little thing that Trump just said is very important, where he said, what do you think his name really is? What do you think his name really was? He didn't just say this one time. He has said this many times over the course of the last several months, ever since Jack Smith was the one who was put in charge by Merrick Garland, who, by the way, folks, Garland's not his real last name either. His real last name is Garfinkel, okay? Now, the reason this is important, why Trump said this, what do you think his real name is? He is signaling to people. In his very own special patented Trump way of choreographing or transmitting certain ideas without actually saying it. He did this with his comments about the dancing Muslims in New Jersey on the morning of 9/11. Well, those of you out there, those of us who have done any research on 9/11, knows that those weren't Muslims who were dancing on the morning of 9/11. They were Israeli intelligence officers who were cheering at the destruction that was taking place that day. And so Trump's strategy, obviously, in saying that, the dancing Muslims thing, is that when people hear this, they say, oh, I didn't know anything about this. I didn't hear anything about any dancing Muslims. And so what do? They go to the internet. They go to a search engine. They punch in dancing Muslims, 9/11, New Jersey. And what do they come up with, folks? They find out about the five dancing Israelis. Trump is doing the same thing here by saying, wonder what his real name is. Now, he said something else too. He said, it sounds so innocent. Well, if that sounds familiar, folks, it should, because when Trump and his people were engaged in this takedown operation of the pedophile and the sex abuse scandals that was raging in Hollywood, and Harvey Weinstein, whatever, when he was the focal point of it, Trump made a very cryptic remark when he was down in Texas following the disaster of Hurricane Harvey, when he was sitting with the governor of Texas. And let's just take a little stroll down memory lane, folks.
Probably there's never been anything so expensive in our country's history. There's never been anything so historic in terms of damage and in terms of ferocity as what we've witnessed with Harvey. Sounds like such an innocent name, Ben, right? But it's not innocent.
Same language, folks. Talks about Jack Smith. Sounds like such an innocent name, but it's not. Talking about Hurricane Harvey. This was right before the scandal broke, folks. So Trump was transmitting. He was speaking to the organized forces of anti-Gentilism who were working against him. He says, he is telling them, get ready for what's coming. Okay. Now, Jack Smith, you know, the fact that Trump made these references where he kept saying, what's his real name? Obviously, folks, this isn't just a conspiracy theory on the part of yours truly. It got under the skin of the Jews themselves, because they immediately recognized what has been an age-old situation involving Jews changing their names, and how Gentiles always, you know, in the interests of protecting themselves, they always asked the question, what was his name before he changed it? Okay, here's a story appearing in The Nation. And it is, it is written by David Margolik, definitely not of the Gentile persuasion. And it's entitled, Donald Trump Sinks to a New Low by Dog Whistling an Old Racist Tune. Insinuating that Special Prosecutor Jack Smith changed his name might seem like an odd tactic for someone whose family name was Trump, unless you know the history of this practice. Donald Trump's most recent Mar-a-Lago rant, the one following his first indictment on April 4th. Remember, folks, this is going all the way back to the indictments brought forth by the very large prosecutor in New York at the state operating at the state level. The first indictment on April 4th was mostly the same old stuff delivered off a teleprompter with his usual listless monotone, as if by now his shtick bores even him. But one seemingly offhanded comment passed largely unnoticed, and the few who picked it up, who picked up on it, largely laughed it off. This lunatic special prosecutor named Jack Smith, I wonder what it was prior to a change, Trump said that night. He then paused for a moment as if to let the cognoscenti, that means the insiders, savor his little aside, and a smattering of knowing sinister laughter rippled off across the room. Sorry, folks. At least a few people seemed to catch his drift. But the mainstream media didn't. What was he suggesting? Jonathan Lemire asked on Morning Joe the next day. Was it that Jack Smith was using an alias? He asked with wonder. In fact, Trump's been throwing out the same questions about Smith for months. Why he keeps bringing this up is something of a mystery, writes Steve Bannon, a producer on the Rachel Maddow show. A little bit of history. America and Trump's makes things considerably less mysterious. Any Jew of a certain age recognizes Trump's trope as a classic anti-Semitic slur, one dating back to Henry Ford and probably before. Don't you know, yet another way we Jews pull fast ones on quote-unquote real Americans is by hiding behind anglicized names, the better to insinuate ourselves into American life. With any other immigrant group, name changes are viewed largely as a matter of convenience. If a Hungarian or an Italian changes his name, it's no big deal. But when a Jew does it, it's evidence of a plot. So what our Jewish writer here, folks, is honing in on is the fact that Trump is leading his followers, his base of support, to put two and two together and to understand that the plot to bring him down and to prevent him from coming back into the White House is Jewish in its origin. That's why Trump says that. What's his real name? And by the way, folks, if you take a look at Jack Smith, it's obvious that somewhere back in the woodpile, okay, there's something more than a Smith there. Of all the prosecutors that they could have picked for this, they picked one who is the closest representation that they can get their hands on to Theodore Herzl. And, okay, was this deliberate, folks? I can't say for certain that it was, but I'm leaning 51 to 49%. In fact, that it probably was deliberate. Okay. This is how they communicate with each other. This is how they communicate to the Gentiles who are operating at the top of the food chain, like Trump is. Okay. The fact that Trump is out to destroy Theodore Herzl's plans for creating this empire stretching from the Nile to the Euphrates. And yes, folks, Theodore Herzl, considered the modern founding father of the Jewish state, in fact, that was the name of his book, The Jewish State, that argued for the creation of Israel. He made it very clear that the biblical foundation for the creation of this Jewish state, not only is there a biblical foundation for it, but that the true scope of this Jewish state is just as it is described in the Old Testament, from the Nile to the Euphrates. Now, this wasn't the only one who took note of Trump's use of that that turn of phrase. You know, what was his real name? MSNBC writes, Trump's offensive against Jack Smith takes an incoherent turn. Now, pay attention to that, folks. Because what the writers would like you to believe here is that there's no coherence to Trump's use of that phraseology. There's nothing to look into. Okay, they don't want the American people and especially Trump's base of support to start doing the math on this, okay, and to figure out ultimately that the that all of the orders for this seek and destroy mission against him are going all the way back to Jerusalem and to Benjamin Netanyahu. So, again, Trump's offensive against Jack Smith takes an incoherent turn. The former president's tirades about special counsel Jack Smith seem to reflect something more important than his routine lying. Okay, let's see. No, actually, I'm not going to read the whole article, folks. I'm just going to point out the strategy on the part of this this Steve Bannon, definitely not of the Gentile persuasion, to steer the Gentiles away from following up on what Trump is suggesting here. In the same way that the ADL, when Trump made his statement about the dancing Muslims in New Jersey on the morning of 9/11, the ADL very loudly and very immediately reacted to his statement and condemned his statement, you know, not under the guise that it was going to, obviously, that it was going to lead curious Americans into finding out about what really happened on the morning of 9/11 involving the five dancing Israelis. They did this under the guise that by doing this, Trump was fanning the flames of Islamophobia. Okay. So folks, what we have here with okay, and one more quick thing here. I know I'm kind of discombobulated here, folks. Another sound bite. Hold on.
So you know, a lot of sexual harassment stuff in the news of late, and I couldn't help but notice a very disturbing pattern emerging, which is that many of the predators, not all, but many of them, are Jews.
Yeah, that was Larry David, folks, a comedian of the non-Gentile persuasion. And, you know, it was with this Hurricane Harvey thing that was going on involving Harvey Weinstein and all of these Jewish predators in Hollywood that suddenly found themselves on the receiving end of Trump's wrath. You know, they had to make a joke about it. Okay. I know it's kind of a, you know, we're bouncing back and forth here, but this goes back to what Trump was saying when he was alluding in Texas, talking about Hurricane Harvey and it having such an innocent sounding name, and then the fact that Trump is referring to Jack Smith, okay, and what an innocent sounding name it is. So anyway, folks, I realize that this is kind of a jumbled discussion about these things. But make no mistake about it, as we have discussed on this program and which we will continue to discuss, all of this seek and destroy mission against Trump going all the way back to 2016, it is coming out of Jerusalem, it is coming out of Benjamin Netanyahu and the Likud party. And in particular, and folks, this is very important. They don't really care about immigration. They don't really care about abortion. They don't really care about gun control. All of these things that have captivated the American consciousness and which, you know, serves as the fodder for this tornado that is taking place these days. This tornado of discussions and ideas. What they do really care about, however, is somebody coming along, some Gentile leader coming along and screwing up their plans for the Middle East, and in particular for the creation of this Jewish state that stretches from the Nile to the Euphrates rivers. And that's the reason why all of this is going on. All of it. Anyway, that's it for today, folks. I realize this was kind of jumbled up. I hope you were able to put the pieces together that I brought here. You know, there's so much information, folks. I mean, we're dealing with a puzzle here that's got thousands of pieces that have to be put together in just the right way in order to create the image. And it's very mentally taxing. Very mentally taxing for anybody to do this, especially for yours truly. But make no mistake about it, okay? We can put these pieces together. Yes, it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of diligence, a lot of care, a lot of accuracy. But that is the picture that we're facing here, folks. The destruction of this man because of what he plans to do in the Middle East. So that's it for today, folks. Very quickly, I want to thank a few people who sent some very generous donations in to help us out with the costs associated with putting this little program together. And, of course, the kind words as well. And so anybody who is in the position to help us out, of course, we always appreciate that. So, folks, that's it. Until we meet again, God willing, stay safe, stay sharp, and let's all hope for a miracle.